They're the Inmates, and the song called The Walk. And talking of inmates, they've escaped over the wall. We've got special guests this lunchtime. So pull yourself up a little bit closer to that microphone. We've got former pop star, playboy, and leader of the Isle of Wight Council, Phil Jordan. Morning, Mr. Jordan.
Good morning, Ian. Really good to see you again. I like the pop star and playboy, the leader bit I'm not sure about.
And we've got deputy leader, is that the correct term?
That's right.
And we've got Sir Andrew Garrett in as well. Morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me come in.
Welcome. You're welcome. Is this the first time you've been to Vectors Radio?
It is.
All right, so you're in for a bit of a bumpy ride then.
I'm sure I am. I've been told. I've been warned.
You've been warned. All right. So look, let's start with something a little bit, I don't know, warm and friendly. Let's find out a little bit more about Andrew Garrett. You're councillor for where?
Councillor for Parkhurst and Honey Hill, so that includes the prison, although none of the inmates there, to use your word, inmates, are people who are, of course, who are members of our electorate. But yeah, I stretch from basically the Sainsbury's garage all the way out to Mark's Corner and up to the Pink Mead Estate. I always say that I've got a lot of squirrels as well as my constituents because I represent the forest.
Right, OK. How nice. And how long have you been a councillor?
On this council since 2017, so coming up to my ninth year. But I was actually first elected to Southampton City Council in 1991. So I've been on Southampton, then Bournemouth, then returned to my roots. I grew up here on the Isle of Wight, down in Lake. So I always say I'm far too opinionated not to stand.
Right,
others say that too.
So it would be fair, you say you've got plenty of experience. But you can, I mean, you know, Southampton must be totally different to the Isle of Wight. So what are the differences?
Well, the big difference, of course, with Southampton, it's a city, and it has a university. So the ward I represented in Southampton had the university within it. So a lot of young people compared to the Isle of Wight, and a lot of people who move into the city from elsewhere for work and other reasons. And what I've always found was that moving back here to the Isle of Wight is just how much our identity, which I always felt when I grew up here, is with the Isle of Wight as a community, and that whatever our political differences on councils, we pull together. In Southampton and even in Bournemouth, there was still that sense of people, the connection wasn't quite in the same way.
Okay, well, compared to Southampton, what's our biggest challenges, or do they have the same?
Well, they have the same challenges that we do with poverty. A lot of people in Southampton really struggling to get by, as they are on the Isle of Wight. But obviously, we have the Solent separating us from the mainland. They have the Solent separating them from the island. But it's a very asymmetric relationship. We are so dependent upon the Solent, and the cost of us as residents getting across, tourists coming across, but just doing business, it just makes things so very difficult. And I think you might be asking us about the budget and the impact on council budgeting, just of having that short stretch of water on the costs of things, the economies of scale we can't achieve. So, yeah, but I'm kind of slipping into a bit of council speak there, so
all right, yeah.
Maybe you should move us on.
Okay, so before we bring in Phil, I just want to ask another question. When it comes down to, do you know how much budget you get on the island? Sure you do, but do you know, can you compare that to what they get on in Southampton? A better way of putting it is, do they get treated a little bit better than we do?
Well, one of the things, and we may touch on it later, is Southampton seem to have done very well out of the Fair Funding Review compared to us, which has been anything other than fair. Obviously, Southampton has a bigger population than us, and there are many things in the government funding formula that mean different sums of money come our way. But maybe Phil will be touching on this when we discuss the budget. We have been very badly treated by what is anything other than a fair funding review.
Okay.
Outcome.
So we're bringing Phil at this point. How bad is it? How short are we?
Ian, yeah, so first, it's our first outing together, yeah. Andrew and I. Yeah. So this is, we've never been seen in public together, have we? I don't think we have, Andrew, but no. Anyway. You stay in Newport and I stay in Ryde, and never the twain shall meet, you know.
Right.
But look, It's bad. It was always going to be difficult. It's just got a little more harder. Andrew just referred to it in terms of the fair funding review. So that's something government did. I spent a long time doing it. We all held our breath for long enough thinking they'll recognise the island for what it is. Firstly, it's an island, because that's been a bit of a struggle for a while with government. They still think we're an estuary somehow, but there you go. Right. We're an island. We've got water all around us, and we've got to come across that water to exist and deliver everything. So Fair Funding Review came out, and all of a sudden we are £13 million worse off in 3 years. So year one, that's next year, 26-27, we're going to have to find an additional £4.5 million of savings. We started out trying to find about £2-2.5 million. Now, I'll put that in the context of it. It's people, you know, when you talk millions of pounds, but people, what's that mean? It's beyond my ideas. But it's an organisation of 235 million, the council, and it delivers all those services for that, collects your waste, manages the roads, I'll say that quietly. it delivers social care, both for our elderly and for children, and two-thirds of that budget go on social care. So one-third of our budget in the council goes on everything else, everything that this council delivers, and there's lots of things it does deliver. So to find 13 million over 3 years, or this year 4.5 million, is an enormous problem for us, and we're going to need help on that. We're going to need
help.
Does
it mean redundancies?
Look, we're not looking at staffing at the moment. This council, since 2010, have lost in excess of 600 staff since 2010. And it shows in the council. Our existing staff, some have two, some even three jobs, three responsibilities or two responsibilities. They're over. It's an over-expectation on the amount of staff we have. I can't see personally where we could lose any staff anywhere. The opposite's true for me, actually. We need more staff.
Yeah.
How we pay it, I don't know, but that's what we actually need, because we're struggling with the level of staff we've got. So at this stage, we're not looking at those things.
When you think 600 you've lost over X amount of years, that's a lot of people doing a lot of work.
It's huge. Can you imagine that since 2010? Can you imagine? So it's 15 years ago. Imagine that amount of extra people delivering the services that we're delivering. Okay, we've cut some services. We understand that. People understand that. But, you know, that's not how it works. It's an enormous hit on the deliverability of council services. Enormous.
Okay, I just want to take you back to last night, refresh our memories, because I wasn't there. I don't know what happened, but there was a meeting last night. And did we ever vote on a few things? If so, what's the snapshot of it?
Yeah, so last night was our full council. Next month's going to be our budget setting. So it wasn't budget setting last night. We had numbers of issues. There were things like the pay policy for the staff. That's not setting pay. We don't do that. That's national agreements and local agreements with the unions. But it's the policy of how we pay. So for equality, diversity and all that. So we agreed that. Local council tax support, we've agreed to recommend into the budget, to adopt in the budget, sorry, not recommend, to adopt into the budget the same level of council tax support. That's vital, Ian, because that's those people in our community who struggle to make ends meet and are in receipt of benefits and so on in poor circumstances. I don't mean they are poor, but circumstances that they live in are difficult and poor. We'll have that support the same as this year and the year before. So we're very proud, even in this financial difficulties that we're in, that we're able to maintain that, and we will continue to do that.
Brilliant. It sounds like the people are listening and they care about their community, and you're doing all you can to fight for us. Just something that came out in the news the other day, and I read it, and then I read it again, and I thought this is a little bit misleading, because they said they were talking about pay increases for councillors, but it's not as simple as that, because other people suggest, they give you the suggestion that you should be having a pay increase. It's not the councillors saying that we should have a pay increase. So what's your thoughts on that, a pay increase?
Well, thank you, Andrew.
We're bored people
with all this, although people are interested in it. So very quickly, this is how the system. Firstly, you have to have an independent panel review the allowances. It's not, we're not wages, but it doesn't matter what you call it. It's tautology, but we have an independent panel. That's by law. They go away and do that. So you say to this panel, go away and review what councillors get paid, right? They come back with a recommendation, whatever it is, and the councillors, sat as full council, say, thank you, we agree with that proposal, or no thanks, we don't agree with that proposal. So the council agree a proposal. They're not involved at all with the setting of the budget. Now, the devil's advocate in this, Ian, is that... And I see this, and Andrew will see this, and we're part of this. You look around the council chamber, and it's all people my age and slightly younger. Not every single one. We do have some female councillors and some younger councillors, but largely it's older people. And one of the reasons is that the allowance doesn't allow you to do the job as a councillor and work, or not work and do the job as a councillor. It's not enough money.
Right.
And so what you do by default is keeping the level of the allowances down for councillors, you kind of pressurise older people who are retired, coming near retirement, don't need the money, not supporting families, to become councillors. And that diverse part of our community, younger people with families, men, women, don't apply to be a councillor, don't stand for election. So you've got to, that's the devil's advocate.
You've got to balance
this.
It up.
You've got to balance this up.
Otherwise, you're just left with lots of old people, aren't you?
Old people like me.
Yeah, well, you alluded to Andrew because you never put him in any of the other categories.
Well, I don't know where old Andrew
this year I shall be 60, so I'm looking forward to that, knocking another big birthday on that.
Well, good luck with
November
that.
The 4th for anybody who wants to send me a card. But Ian, earlier I said that I'd been a councillor in Southampton in 1991, so you can do the maths, and I was 24. But I wasn't alone in my as a 24-year-old councillor. There were other councillors in that council chamber who were below the age of 30 and then are spread into their 30s and 40s and 50s. There's nothing wrong, I hope, because I hope to remain on the council if the electorate and my ward are willing to stay on into my 60s. Nothing wrong with that. But what it is and what Phil has been saying is we shouldn't be so undiverse as that. We should have a lot more people in their 20s and 30s and 40s.
Put it really, really well about the payments and the finances as well. And I say, we should make that point is you're not saying, right, we want a pay rise. It's a case of somebody else does that and you okay it at some point if you like the idea of. But I do welcome those details about and making us think, hang on a minute, there are family people that are younger and they need to have some kind of finances to be able to do that job, that role. So that's important to get across. Now, are you ready, Andrew?
I'm ready, yes.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah. As the ward councillor for where you're about to mention.
So we're looking at the road between Newport and Cowes.
Yes, okay, we are indeed.
And it's going to close again. Can you just give us the details?
January the 26th. So this coming Monday is when they start doing the work. But the closure itself starts on early evening on the Sunday, according to the signs. And what we've got is another, well, this time potentially 11 weeks or so of massive disruption. And it's going to disrupt me. Most of my clients live in Cowes and Gurnard. I live in Newport. Last summer I went round and round more times than the roundabout, it felt, on that diversion route. But it is essential. Last few years we've seen Horsebridge Hill closed many times to hunt out leaks in these mains that they were built in, that they were put in 1886, I'm told.
So Phil was around then.
Phil was around then. That's not how
young boy.
You'll remember that one, Phil. But 140 years old. They're obviously not modern. That's pretty obvious. But they're leaking, and leaking pipes not only cost in terms of the money, the water that's coming out of those pipes, but if they start undermining the road surface, there's that potential of something catastrophic happening to our road surface. And I'm not looking forward to it. I can absolutely tell you I'm not looking forward. And I utterly understand, because I've experienced it, the frustration we're going to experience, which is going round and round that diversion. If it can get done and get done quickly, and let's hope that the 11 weeks is the pessimistic one, bad weather and all of those things. If Southern Water can get it done sooner, that will be great. And if it then heads off that we're not getting the road dug up ad hoc, as has happened so many times in the last few years, we will be for the better, but it's not going to be fun.
See, again, I'm glad you came in to explain it, because I thought that the previously it was because of the housing, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yes, to build that new junction.
But this time it's not to do with the housing at all.
No, it's that mains pipe. It's about 500 metres of 140-year-old water mains that has to be replaced. And I've been asking them about the details of it, because I like watching civil engineering, seeing what they're doing. They've got to dig down deep. They've got to get around all the other utilities and whatever. They don't necessarily know what's underneath the ground as well. We've got 140 years of history of underneath the ground. What are we going to find there? Oh, so they've got to be careful with it.
Don't say that, because that will just delay it, won't it?
Well, I hope not. What if we find Roman remains or something?
Oh,
that'll excite the archaeologists, and the rest of us will be a bit unsure about that one. But it's not a simple thing of just digging a trench and putting a pipe down. There's a whole load of logistics, and that's way beyond my understanding and pay grade to know why
should do
this.
Do we actually need to close the road, and do we actually have to have it the one way that way? Why can't it be the other way? That is something I've heard a lot. So people, if they're rushing to get the ferry, they got to go all the way around rather than straight through. So is there any reason why we can't have it the other way around?
Well, I did ask that question, and I, to be honest, I'm still not quite sure I understand their answer. But it is about it strikes me that left turns all the way from Palance Road round to Forest Road would make sense. But then it's the pressure on those junctions getting the traffic back and forward across into Palance Road, and the way it would work then with St Mary's Junction. So the explanation I've had is that the judgment is it will be more freely flowing if it goes the other way around. And also adding into that, yes, a lot of people will be those people who want to use Red Funnel or Red Jet to get across the Solent. But there will be people who will be wanting to go in the other direction as well. So it is that balance between which communities are most affected, plus how do you get the initial right turns into Palance Road and those working smoothly. So
there's
still some work to go on getting a proper explanation.
Yeah, I don't understand the reason why they can't do the other way. I've lived on this island most of my life, and I've driven on it for 42 odd years, and I'm looking at it and thinking, I've used that road that we're talking about many, many times, and I can't understand why we can't twist it around.
Well, I have asked for a bit more explanation on that. But
is it too late? Would they change their mind if we put
I don't think they would. The assessment will have been made by Southern Water, who are the responsible company for the traffic management plan. It has been signed off by Island Roads under the authority of the Isle of Wight Council as Highways Authority. I don't think we have a chance of getting that decision changed now. And partly, I almost hate to say this, but sometimes I have to accept that there is a professional judgment that I am not necessarily going to agree with, and a professional judgment that is going to take me a long time to understand. But hopefully we've learnt, or those who are managing the plan have learnt a lot from what happened in the summer when we were suddenly 10 days out from the works, just dumped into this, and we found that. And a lot of backfilling at that time, so make sure that the buses could flow through, the emergency vehicles going through under the give and take lights.
Yeah, I fully understand we've got to have the work done. I fully understood that we had to have the houses as well. But, you know, the other question is you've got a pub that it was there, and I think the owner of the pub has now given up the ownership of the pub.
Indeed.
And I think so they've lost their business. And then you've got the museum as well. They've lost, I think, I think it was a third of their business at the other time that they did it, the same time previous year.
And there is a difference here, because it's a utility company, so a different bit of legislation comes in, and whilst it isn't necessarily something that will be automatic. It is possible for businesses to claim some compensation. They may not get it, but they are eligible for compensation. It is not the same as last summer, where there is no statutory availability to compensate businesses who are making losses. So any business that is being affected should be looking very, very carefully at what the law might allow for them and what eligibility criteria.
So if they're listening, how do they go about that then? Because they might not even know, aren't they?
The place to go is Southern Water. Southern Water should be able to explain to them what's required in terms of the accounts and that side of things. I have asked, and Southern Water don't seem to have, like other water companies, a specific web page setting this out. I may be wrong, but businesses should be contacting Southern Water. Southern Water should be then explaining to them how they can make that compensation application. If anybody's having trouble, I'm very willing as a councillor to try and open the door for any business that's being affected. And I'm sure Phil would, and any of my colleagues on the island.
Okay, I mean it would have been go back that last time when the houses were being built. It would have been nice if, just say, for instance, the company that were building the houses were saying, right, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to send our workforce to your pub to have their lunch every day, or their lunch 2-3 times a week. And by the way, we're also going to buy them entry to the museum, and that keeps everybody sweet. And I would imagine that's just a drop in the ocean for the monies that they're actually going to make.
Yeah, well, that's a question to the developer there.
Sure,
of course, but I do know that the stag was very badly hit. Conversation I had with the proprietor there, the museum, but even the Premier's store, which is on Horsebridge Hill, suffered greatly because so much of its trade was passing trade, people stopping off to pick up something, as convenience stores are there for.
Okay, so do you have a message for the people that are going to vote you in, hopefully in May of this year? Because this, I mean, like it or not, this might affect you as well, because people might look at you and think, well, hang on a minute, you're our councillor, and look, we're all struggling now because of the road. So have you got a message for those, a positive message, you know, because, you know, we need to help each other, we need to support each other, you know, and that sort of thing. So have you got a message for them?
Well, I would say that the positive message is it will be over. So that's the start point. This is not something that will go on forever, but more positively, I would say, if you are having any issue with the scheme at all and the way it's been delivered, Southern Water have published and made available, and I've made sure it's on my newsletters to the residents that I represent, the contact details for Clancy there, their contractor, so making sure they pick up any of those little things that got overlooked. And we found this in the summer, so much was overlooked. And my biggest kind of complaint in all of this, both for last summer and for now, is because there's no statutory requirement to properly consult, there wasn't that level of consultation that could have been had. Southern Water did hold one drop-in, but that was early in December. They have put their own sort of letters out with information on that, has been great. If there's anything that I can do as a ward councillor for Parkeston and Honeyhill residents and colleagues, John Nicholson, Northwood, and those going further north, but any councillor, I'm sure we would pick that up and take it up. One thing that we did find in the summer, and we've been pressing for again, is a kind of weekly briefing amongst the those who are doing the works and those of us who are representing residents, to make sure that action is taken when we've discovered there's something that isn't working in any way as well as it should do.
Okay, look, I've got a couple of, I know you got to go, and I know we were already up to the time when you needed to go. So floating bridge, if that's out of action at all during this period of time, oh no, it's going to affect everything. So, I mean, it's floating bridge, all right for the 11 weeks?
I mean, I'm looking to my right here for listeners to Phil, because he for many years had a transport brief. So how much assurance can you give us on the floating bridge, do you think, Phil?
Well, let's hope I can give you a lot of assurance, because actually, as you've heard me say before, Ian, the floating bridge, actually, after all this time, just when we're starting about talking buying a new one, by the way, is working perfectly well and running to around 98%, nearly 100%, it's not 100%, but nearly 100% of its schedule, running time. The hours that it's not running, this is actual, this is data, not me just guessing it. It is not many hours a month. Now, not many hours a month for some people that want to use it's, you know, disruptive, we understand that, but it's no, the floating bridge has changed from when it first came in. It wasn't trialed and tested and it broke down. We've renewed so much on it, and partly, and I, you know, we've spoken about this before, Ian, we entered into negotiation with that builder and designer, and that's all settled and finished and done with. But that, the settlement reflected the poor design and poor build of that vessel. But we've replaced all those parts now. We've replaced them. That vessel's running okay.
Excellent. Okay.
It's okay.
That's good news. So this Sunday, everything's going to happen. Lights are going to go up, and they're going to be, you know, pavements are going to be lit up, and so
there'll
on.
There'll be cones, and there'll be lights, and there'll be diversion signs. And yes, it is going to be, I'm going to call it misery. It's going to be miserable. But all the councillors who represent those communities have been very aware of, and been very engaged with Southern Water, as we were with Captiva, the developer, and Island Roads last summer. So we're hoping a good number of lessons have been learned. It is not going to be fun by any means.
Okay.
Do, if possible, plan ahead. I know that's not possible for a lot of people. If there are any tweaks that could happen, do let us know, and we will certainly want to put pressure on that. I've done a couple of
Brilliant.
Front page pictures of me doing the classic grumpy councillor thing, but we may be grumpy councillors, but we do push really hard where we think there needs to be change, and if something comes up in the next few weeks, we will push for that.
Excellent. Okay, look, you go under the radar largely because I don't think you've ever been in on the radio before, but it's really nice to spend some time with you this lunchtime.
It's been great. Yeah, it's can have nice. Me again if you wish.
Brilliant, because it's nice to have, you know, people come in, politicians come in, and, you know, they care and so on, and I know Phil does as well, and it's nice to not be waving the political flag and colours around as well. So caring about your flock is the most important thing, and that's what gets you elected. Two questions left. They're yes no answers. Might be a bit tricky one for you, Phil, but for you, Andrew, I think I know the answer. Are you standing in the election in May?
It's my intention to stand again, yes. I've got some uncompleted business, particularly around the prison estate roads. We're almost there with getting a tender out. I've been banging on about for months, years on this. We took ownership of roads 5 years ago. They need upgrading. I have been promised by the chief executive herself that in early February a tender will go out for a contract to upgrade those prison estate roads that the council now owns, but I see that as unfinished business, and I will be standing again to make sure that work is delivered, along with many other things that I want to make sure. I've always felt I'd served on three councils, this is my third, that ultimately I will leave the council one day. I want to be able to walk around my community and said I did some good.
How refreshing to hear that. Thank you for that. And Phil, you're not ducking the difficult question.
Okay. All right. So quick answer is it's a no. It's a no because the wife said to me, if you stand again, I will leave you. Now, that set me thinking. So that got me to thinking that I might stand again because she said the same thing 4 years ago and I did stand and we're still not divorced. So yes and no.
Hang on, so yes and no, or well, depending on your marriage situation?
It's a no because I'm at the threat of divorce, but I had that threat 4 years ago and she didn't divorce me, so it's a yes.
I don't think we're any the clearer, are we? I hope your wife's not listed. You ain't getting any tea tonight, whichever.
I'll cook at home, Ian.
Look, thank you both for doing what you're doing for the community. I really appreciate it. I know that there's dark times out there and a lot of people shout and holler and so on and so, but I do know that there are a lot of people within the council that are working incredibly hard to make things better for islanders, and I know that you're just two of those people that are doing it. So thank you both.
Thank you very much.
That's very kind of you to say that, Ian.
It is.